Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Describe Washington right now through six games. We don't have a small sample size anymore, but we don't have a large sample size, but we're approaching the midpoint of the season. We are 2.5 games away from the midpoint of the season. Six games into it. A lot of teams have played just five. Washington's record is 3-3. That is second in the NFC East, one game behind Philadelphia. If you're wondering if the playoffs started today, Washington would not qualify. Their situation right now is that two of their three wins have come against AFC teams, the Raiders and the Chargers. It's much better when you have three losses if all three of them came against AFC teams and you were undefeated against NFC teams. They've only won one game against the NFC, and that was the opener against the Giants. But it is a very bunched up NFC. You go from currently the top seven teams, which includes the Rams at number seven, to then Atlanta, Minnesota, Chicago, Carolina, all ahead of Washington. Based on record and, potential tiebreaker. Long way to go before we have tiebreaker conversations. But what is Washington through six games? I want something, as concise as possible. I don't want, a long-winded answer. Somebody comes up to you and says, I haven't seen him yet. Tell me about your team. What is your answer? My answer is, in one sentence, Washington is a playoff contending team in the NFC with a roster that is barely average, but has a way above average quarterback. We understand the significance of quarterback, and so as long as he plays, they will be in every game and have a chance to win enough games to qualify for the playoffs. Biggest concern that the defense is a major liability. That's my description. What's yours at 301-230-0980? Max, do you have one for me?
Yeah, I've got one. I'll break it down in terms of just teams. Offense, real short, real sweet. They're fine. They go as the quarterback goes. Protection could be better, but that's just kind of how the NFL goes. Offense, fine. Defense, they need lots of improvement almost at every level. Linnell kind of called them Jekyll and Hyde, which I really don't hate as a descriptor. But if you're struggling at almost every level, it doesn't really scream a player issue to me. Something needs to change, and I think DQ might need to get a little bit more hands-on as things go. And with that hands-on approach, then you got to produce more turnovers. So that's my defensive description. Then special teams, immaculate. I will protect Larry Izzo with my life. So that's kind of where we fall in terms of my short descriptors.
All right, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I would tell you, if you hadn't seen any of the games, this is a playoff contending team in the NFC, but that basically the team overall is average, barely average, but they've got a way above average quarterback. He gives them the chance to win more games than they lose. The defense, by far and away, is the team's biggest weakness, flaw, liability. 301-230-0980. Let's start with our guy Lou in DC. Lou, go ahead.
What's up, Kevin?
Lou, what's happening?
I gotta disagree, man. I can't say they are a playoff team because the simple fact that, I thought that the defense was going to be the strength to kind of, you know, to keep us in the game. But the way they've been playing, I mean, when they play a weak team, the defense get a couple of sacks here and there. But when they play a decent team, I mean, even Chicago, they're not that strong. I mean, we could have done a lot of things with them. But it seemed like play calling, Joe Witt and Dan Quinn, you know, when they were a coach with Dallas, I mean, they blitz. I mean, they used to blitz us and get all these turnovers and things like that. I don't see any of that over here. I don't see that aggression. And it seems like we just one-dimensional. They depend on Jaden way too many often. And teams are finding out, you know, they just, I don't know, they just not, you know, I can't say they're a playoff team, man. They just, the defense is just not our strength anymore. And it seemed like, especially coming like the...
Well, defense hasn't been the strength at any point, you know, over the last year and six games now.
No, with the addition that the guys, I know we, you know, a couple of guys that they hurt, but with the addition that we had, you know, Wise and, you know, the other two.
Yeah, Wise is a good point bringing up Wise. His loss, significant. They wanted to be better on the edge, and we saw Monday night against a team that attacked them on the edge. They don't have anybody that can set an edge because DeAndre Swift is not, you know, an upper-tier back. He's good. He's good, but he shouldn't go for 7.7 yards per carry, period.
Yeah. I appreciate you, Kevin.
Yep. Lou says not a playoff team. Let me just be clear. What I said was Washington is a playoff contending team in the NFC with a roster that is barely average, but it has a way above average quarterback. Let's go to our guy Billy in Chantilly. We missed him yesterday. Billy, can you answer the question? Describe the team after six games.
The team, Kevin, good morning. The team is reflective of a general manager who is good at his job but totally messed up the signing of their, or re-signing or whatever you want to call it, of their number one offensive threat in Terry McLaurin. And now we're seeing the results of that bad decision. He just made a bad decision.
He did re-sign him.
Terry would have been in camp in July instead of September 1 or whatever he got into camp. The offense would have been in step. The offense keeps the defense off the field. You'd probably be 4-2 or 5-1 or 6-0. He screwed up. Adam,
Billy, do you give Terry and his agent any of the blame for that or not?
Terry did not have zero leverage. He had all the leverage. The agent's an idiot. You can't
he did.
For idiots when you're a general manager.
He got a crappy deal with all that leverage that you think he had.
He had all the leverage. Terry had all the leverage. We're 3-3. Take a good look at the offense.
Yeah,
that's the leverage. Wins and losses. Kevin,
yeah, well, he didn't turn that. Then they really did a crappy job. I think they had no leverage because he was under contract, and they got a crappy deal with all that leverage. Now we can that's separate.
We're 3-3.
That's separate from the conversation we're having that you want to have, which is if they had just given him what he wanted, which would have blown out a lot of norms for that particular player, would have been completely undisciplined as an organization, in my opinion, and just given him what he wanted in June, then they would be a better team right now. That's fine if you believe that, and I certainly think that they would be a better team with him versus without him. I don't know how much that injury specifically had to do with him not participating this summer. I can't answer that. I'm not suggesting that it wasn't a role, didn't play a factor in it. I just can't tell you that for sure, and I don't think you can tell me that for sure.
Yeah, well, nobody can. I wish we could, but I know he would have been in camp in July. The part B of the comment is Jaden did get squished up in the fourth quarter of the game. They never showed the replay. Both times he had his knee stuck up underneath him, and every time they went to the replay, they cut it right before Cliff's got to get organized on the offense and get this Terry, this Jaden out of trouble with all this running nonsense.
Okay.
If Jaden was the quarterback of the Bears would have won 60-0.
You know what?
Williams can't play.
That's probably true. The one thing, though, I know I'm stuck on this, but, you know, call me whatever you want to call me. Terry and his agent, maybe it's more so his agent, has a lot of responsibility, in why they did not get this deal done. They were completely delusional as to what his worth was.
Yes.
And with all the leverage you claim he has, I disagree. It's an all-time horrible deal if they actually had the leverage you suggested they had. So,
well, Adam should have held his nose and got him into camp. He's your number one receiver.
But you can't do that, Billy. You can't do that as a first-time general manager with your first big contract negotiation, go way outside the norm and overpay by miles a player that's entering his age 30 season. I have no problem with how the organization handled it. They, as I said right from the beginning, they don't have to give him anything. They didn't have to give him anything, and they did. He should have signed it sooner. He should have come to the reality that he wasn't worth Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase or any of these kind of, you know, receivers that are legitimate superstar receivers. And if he had come to the reality of that, or if his agent had helped him come to the reality of that, he would have been in camp a lot sooner. Thanks for the call. But that is separate from if he had gotten into camp, would the situation have been different? Maybe. Maybe. I'm not going to dispute that. Maybe he wouldn't have gotten hurt. Maybe early on there would have been more chemistry. I don't know. Let's go to Brad and Frederick. Brad, to someone who hasn't seen any of these six games, now that we've got more than just a small sample size, describe our team.
Kevin, how you been, buddy?
Brad, what's going on, man? Good to hear your voice.
Hey, man. You as well. So, correct me, that we score 26 or what, 28 a game? What are we averaging? Something like that on offense, 26?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll look it up.
Ridiculous. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Anyway, so I would describe it. I'll answer your question first. I would describe it as a non-playoff team and still in remote.
We're averaging 26.3 points per game. That's right. Seventh in the league in scoring.
Terry is not a problem. The offense isn't a problem. So anyway. I would describe them as a non-playoff team and still rebuilding, as I thought they would be, which I'm not really surprised. A little disappointed, but not surprised. So I want to go back to yesterday. You took a call and you were talking to him about, would you rather have Trey Hendrickson or X wide receiver? And I can't remember wide receiver's name. And the answer is always, we need more offensive power. We need more offensive power. But to your point, Trey Hendrickson is the answer. What this organization didn't do in the offseason is give their franchise quarterback what he really needed to succeed, and that's a defense. And you just said it, a superstar quarterback and elevate talent around him, which he has done. But you can't stop anybody. In the NFL, you're never going to be successful, and they have not done that yet. They're the oldest team, and we're inherited a lot of mess, and they have to rebuild that side of the ball. But it's never going to get better, Kevin.
They tried, though. They recognized, Brad, that they had a problem defensively. They went out and got bigger with Kinlaw. They got an edge guy in Wise, and they lost him. By the way, Goldman didn't play the other night. He's actually played well. It's very possible they missed Eddie Goldman, believe it or not, the other night. They tried. They were interested in Hendrickson, but the price was too high, and ultimately Cincinnati wasn't dealing him. So, and they drafted a corner in the second round that had, you know, kind of a first-round grade. So, you're right. They did not add, like, a game-wrecking, you know, edge, pass-rushing kind of player that could have elevated this defense. But I don't know that there was one to be had unless you wanted them to draft it.
I agree. What they did is say, let's get Tunzel, let's get Debo, let's build this offense, let's give him his high power so we can score 45 a game and we'll outscore our bad defense. They did try to improve, Kevin, but, you know, they went to, let's say, Sam's Club. You know, they went to this, we'll go in this route, right? We'll overpay a Kinlaw guy that no one really knows is what he is, really.
Like, by the way, he's been good.
He's been good, but to your point, they don't have great.
Yeah.
That roster on that side of the ball is not good, and there's not great talent on that, and they're old. So it's just, they are still, and they will get it. I don't have faith they will do it. I'm not saying they won't, They just haven't done it yet, and there's still a long way to go. And in this league, on the defensive side of the ball, if you can't stop anybody, you can't ask him to be Superman every single game and win these games 35 to 34. It's just, it's not a recipe for success. And you know that. I mean, I'll tell you that, but.
Yeah, the only thing is, you and I probably said this to each other all last season, and they just kept overcoming it. But, and I pointed this out, and I think everybody's pointed this out, I'm not the only one, is last year they were overcoming their terrible defense against Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener, Tommy DeVito, Cooper Rush, you know, Andy Dalton, the list goes on and on, right, in terms of who they faced.
We're not schedule people, right? We're not schedule people.
I know, but
I'm not going to look at a schedule. You don't, but you have to account for what your schedule is and the talent you were going to face. They did not account for that defensively to play the talent that they're playing to win these games like last year. You're not going to win on Hail Marys and blocks and this and that and these ways that they were winning and playing your point, Rattlers, DeVitos. You have to account for that. And no, you're playing this elevated talent. This is the NFL. And they just didn't.
I mean, and they got lucky, right, a couple of times. They played a banged-up Giants 100%. Team that still had Russell Wilson in there. 100%. They played a banged-up Chargers team that actually had talent, you know, at skill positions, and but was a mess on their offensive line. Playoffs. I'm sorry?
Right. And they squeaked in.
Yeah.
And they squeaked into the playoffs, right? They got in off of that. Well, that's not – you have to account for that not happening and playing better talent. They just don't have it. And they'll get it. They just don't have it.
All right. Thanks. Good to hear your voice. Let's go to Aveen. Aveen, go ahead. Six games in. Describe the team to somebody who hasn't seen the six games.
Hey, Kevin. I'll say not yet fully operational. And it starts with Jaden Daniels, the quarterback. I totally agree with you in saying that his season didn't really get started till midway through the second quarter of that Chargers game. And since then, aside a couple of, you know, brain fart turnovers, those might be the two worst plays he makes this year. He's looked awesome. I think he looks better this season than last season. I think he's more aggressive. I'm buying into that offseason hype that his velocity is up on throws. I feel like I see that on those seam balls. So I think he looks awesome. I think everything else on the offense is trending upward. I mean, Terry and Cosme have been out. Those are two of our best offensive players. Noah Brown's coming back too. But it's not just that. It's the younger players. The younger players are growing into the offense. They're making more and more contributions. Jaden's trusting them more. So it just seems to me like things are trending up with the offense. And the offense, despite all of this, all the injuries, Jaden being start-stop, really a season not getting started till late, they're still a top-10 offense. This is totally trending towards being a top-5 juggernaut offense with a superstar quarterback. So with that, you know, the defense, two things I'll say about that. I'm a bit more lenient on the Bears game than a lot of people have been in you. Two key things is third down defense and holding teams to field goals. They still were only gave up 3 of 11, third and fourth down to the Bears, held them to 2 touchdowns. One of them was on a short field, quick turnaround turnover, and the other was kind of a fluky play to Swift, 55-yard touchdown. So that's the key. We're going to be one of these.
Well, that fluky play has been a part of the problem. Those big chunk plays, the big explosives.
Right, but that play, it's like there's two guys in position to make a tackle.
Yeah, but we've seen them run into each other. We've seen the issues on that back end. They've got to fix that. I'm not saying that they can't fix it, but they haven't yet. And real quickly, and I'm going to let you finish because Veen's always a sharp caller. You know, you go back and you look at some of those third downs. First of all, Roma Dunze, that's a touchdown. That's not a legal formation, period. It just isn't. And Zacchaeus is still running if he catches the football. A lot of that was self-inflicted, you know, by Chicago and not necessarily defensive forced. The Luvu tip was a great play on fourth down. And they had a couple of opportunities. Sanders still had an opportunity. They got to come up with those. They're going to have to turn some of those opportunities against a quarterback like Caleb Williams, who was inaccurate, Aveen, because they're not going to get that against Dak, not going to get that against Mahomes, not going to get that maybe against, you know, Goff. They did in the playoff game, okay. But, you know, you got to turn – if you're going to be giving up chunk play and now maybe big chunk plays, you know, on the ground, you've got to get a couple of takeaways a game. You have to. Or bad calls to go against the other team, which Chicago had Monday night. What else?
Yep. But just my point is the margin of error is high with the defense just because of how good the offense is. To me, anytime the defense doesn't give up a touchdown, that's a win.
Fair. Fair. No matter how it happens, whether it's them or the opponent.
Right. So, like, when you play the Bills or Lions, you tell yourself, we're not going to win this game kicking field goals. That's what Washington's going to be like. Like, this is – I don't know how you feel, but this feels like a top-five offense, juggernaut offense with a superstar quarterback. And that gives you a lot of room for error on defense. So, I still think it's possible, you know, to win a lot of games, string a lot of wins playing that way with a high-octane juggernaut offense and a defense that makes enough splash plays, holds out the end zone enough times where you can string together wins.
Yeah, I hope, though, you know, we haven't had enough of the splash plays defensively. If this was a team that was just, you know, somewhere in the top half of the league in takeaways, it would be a massive game changer for the results in the win total for this team this year. They've got three takeaways in six games. Only two teams have fewer, and one of those teams has played one less game. So you've got to come up with something, you know, that covers up the fact that you're probably not good enough to just line it up and shut teams down. Not good teams, anyway. Thank you, Aveen, for that. If you're on hold, stay there. We do have a line open if you want to weigh in. 301-230-0980. Describe the team after six games. It's more than a small sample size now. We're six games into the season. They're 3-3. How would you describe them to somebody that hasn't seen any of the six? Take your calls. Continue with them. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, and theteam980.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know if you heard this after the game last night, but Jaden was very forthcoming, saying he lost focus there on that handoff to Bill with 3 minutes left in the game. Was that surprising to you that he would say that he lost focus in that moment, knowing, you know, his track record of being so calm, cool, and collected in those moments?
No, it doesn't surprise me. It actually, you know, probably enhances what I feel about him. That's just like him, to go through those spots and I'm not surprised that he said that. I had a text that we exchanged today. I won't share that, but just about, you know, how important it is, how he plays, and, you know, I'm certain he'll learn from it.
Dan Quinn yesterday, I thought that was an interesting answer to that. I think what he's saying, the obvious answer, I think, in terms of reading between the lines is Jaden's a guy that takes accountability. Doesn't surprise him. He takes accountability. He's not a guy that would throw anybody under the bus. Yeah, not that there was any busts, you know, throwing under opportunity anyway. It's not like the snap was not good. I also thought there was a part of it in there that speaks to, you know, hey, we got to be, you know, a little bit more buttoned up in these situations, a little less kind of laid back, casual. Not that I want him worked up. He's smooth and nothing seems to faze him, but just a little bit more, you know, you've got to take that extra step. That is a crucial situation. I'll mention this again for those that didn't hear it earlier in the show. I don't think they get the first down, even if the exchange and the handoff is a successful one. There was penetration, and it was quick. And that's why the Bears immediately fell on the football and had the opportunity for the recovery, rather than, you know, Kroski Merritt or even Jaden having the opportunity to recover it, you know, because he was in pistol. He was, you know, that bad exchange was, you know, 3-4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I also just wanted to address what Billy in Chantilly said, that Jaden was, you know, banged up and wasn't the same after the roughing the passer low, you know, on Brisker when he came in on the knee. I've now watched every play since. And the play that indicates to me that he was not hurt is the play before the botched handoff fumble. It's a 2nd and 9 at midfield, and Montez Sweat gets immediate pressure. I guess they forgot to block him. I don't know if it's play action to McNichols, and maybe Bates is supposed to chip Sweat, but he doesn't. And Jaden makes Sweat miss badly in the backfield and then takes off and scrambles and nearly gets the first down, diving for it, which set up the 3rd and 1. The next play was the botched handoff. So I don't think we're going to be like, if we're going to have a surprise today with Jaden on the injury report. I don't see that coming, at least based on the way he played after. We'll see. Quinn will certainly be talking. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. What'd you say, Max?
He's speaking right now, actually.
Oh, Quinn is?
Yes.
Do you want to go to that, and then we'll come back to these calls?
Sure. He's just starting the presser now, so we can kick it up and
let's
get it hot.
Let's go to Dan Quinn in Ashburn.
He's still working back from a knee injury, but we are glad to have him here. So all that said, glad to get rolling with you guys.
With Noah, I mean, what happened with the groin? Was there a setback, or was it, did something happen while he was practicing that re-injured it? And I guess why not put him on IR before this point?
Yeah, well, I would say it wasn't a setback. It just hasn't responded, you know, quite the way that it needs to. So I wouldn't call it a setback. Hindsight's 2020. I think the main thing is, man, we're going to get him right. That's the ultimate goal, to get there. So we know that means 4 more weeks, and like, the guy's working incredibly hard at it. And so we want to make sure hit all the marks that we can with him.
Then what's the plan for Terry this week?
He'll practice this week, and I'll have a better sense where we're going, because today is going to be more at a jog through pace where we're not, you know, fully, you know, speed up and going, but that'll be more as we get into tomorrow. But, you know, like, I'll have a better assessment after we go through like some full speed, you know, routes and movements to see where he's at. But I'm excited where he's trending.
With Noah, is this something that would require surgery, or is this just more time, rest, recovery?
More time, and just we're going to really push it, make sure the recovery's right, the strength's right, and just, you know, kind of go through all of it to make sure he's really ready.
Have you had a chance to talk to him as he's dealt with all this? I mean, it's been,
I will today. I
kidney,
didn't,
knee, everything.
This morning. I have, obviously, previously, but not specifically today, but I will this afternoon. Like, he's one of these competitors. He takes it hard. He cares so much. He loves it. And so, you know, moments like now are hard because of who the competitor is. But the good news is that, you know, let's put the plan in place that we can absolutely, you know, nail it to get him back, and that's what we'll aim to do.
Dan, is there any concern with Armstrong and the hamstring going forward?
I think there's always concern in and out, and he kind of showed, man, I'm gonna battle through it to go. We won't really hit our speed stuff till tomorrow, David, so I think I'll have a better shot than that. He's able to do the walks and that kind of stuff today, so I'm encouraged by that. But until you load it, go. The good news is, like I said, he's in, he's out, but meaning coming back and forth into the game. But I'll have a better feel for him tomorrow as we get a little bit more movement.
As you dug into kind of the issues with starts, Do you go all the way into what time are we getting to the stadium? What are they doing pregame? What are our pregame drills looking like? Are you going that deep into it?
I do, and I also want to dig in, you know, to the leaders and say, you know, what are some things that we need to do to hit it? And it's not a score as much as an attitude, a mindset to go. So I want to make sure I'm clear on that, because if you only base it just on that, I think you could miss it. And so it's not that. And I liked the
intentness going, getting ready. And like I said, the offense had a long drive. We turned the ball over at the end of it, but it is important. And so it's more collaboration to say, is there anything else, you know, we need to do and hit differently? I've had those conversations, and I'll continue to tweak it until we get it exactly right.
Coach, how have you seen opposing defenses change their game plans when facing you guys with Terry and Noah's absence?
It depends, I think, where on the field some. I think it's also their matchup, too, you know, in terms of they want to play more man-to-man or doing things differently. The run game, not counting last game into that space, but I think that's been one of the areas we've started to really, you know, hit our marks. And that alone changes some things, because having the ability to go down, stop the run, some of the ones, I think that could be as big a factor as anything. But for sure, that's part of it. But you just have to navigate how you go and who you're there. Like, there's a way to win every game. You just have to go dig in and find it, and it might not be the same every week. And you know, we're equipped to do that.
Over here. Your defense obviously has had some issues, and you're facing one of the best offenses in the league. What has been their psyche since Monday night, and how much does pride play a factor in you guys getting better?
Yeah, I don't also want to portray the sky as falling either. You know, there's some things that I like about how we're doing some things on third down. We're not getting the ball enough, Chick, honestly. And that's one part of playing good defense. We're not hitting our tackling, you know, to the space that I think is the standard that we've set. But we've also had some moments where we know what good can look like and what it does. So we want to make sure we're capturing that. Meetings-wise, it's tense, it's tight, like it should be when you're, you know, trying to dig in and find the right answers. And that's what's cool about this group, that it's not somebody pointing or, you know, doing that. It's, hey, man, let's go through our thing together and how we'd go about it. So you're right, it's a great challenge with Dallas and you know, weapons they have. And I think Dak's honestly hitting, you know, his marks at a high level right now. That's what the tape tells me so far. And we're looking forward to the challenge.
Just to take a step back to Terry, what was the biggest kind of step forward that he took last week, and what do you need to see from him specifically this week if he's going to play?
We call him like a game simulation, where you run different routes, you work different movements. Sometimes in a rehab you could see, you know, it's predicted where you're going to go, and so off-schedule throws, how to do different things. So that's a good step when you're moving forward. So that's part of the process, like in your return to play, to like simulate more closely related, you know, plays. So the fact that we're moving in that direction, that's a good sign.
And then broadly, when making decisions about whether or not somebody goes on IR, like obviously this would be, I think, his fourth week, how do you guys go through that decision-making process?
Through the medical team, and lean into what, you know, the guidelines that they want to set and how to go, how long is a predicted rehab, you know, of this type of nature, you know, going to take. It's not exact, that I can tell you. Not everybody, you know, heals in the same way and the same speeds with this, you know, different types of injuries. So if it was exact, it'd be super easy to do. And so then there's all sorts of other factors. Did it respond? Did it not? And where are we at? So you just try to play it as close as you can, knowing that it's not always going to be on this timeline or that. So I think what I've learned is just, man, have patience and listen, you know, to the player. They know it best. They really do. They're going to push it hard to see where they can go to, but they know it best. And we just follow those guidelines. We got a strict, you know, procedure that we go through. So we just try to stay connected to that and follow and listen.
From Sam Cosmi, with him kind of being on the cusp here, I know you have until next week to activate him.
Yeah, I liked what I saw from him last week. First padded work, he got a lot of reps, and we expect to do that kind of same, you know, process with him this week. But it was a hell of a start for him, you know, to get back and get rolling. He's really put the work in, so I, you know, anticipating seeing that continue and trajectory going up.
All right, you've been listening to Dan Quinn. What you missed at the beginning, but probably gathered from some of the questions, Noah Brown to injured reserve. So that locks him out for the next several weeks. Sure, the question can be asked, why not earlier and have, you know, that roster spot for somebody else? You heard him explain that. With respect to Terry, making progress, he'll have more of an update towards the end of the week. Dorrance Armstrong, you know, hurt his hamstring during the game and was out. And, you know, we had the sideline report about that. Then he came back in and got the half a sack. He was credited with half a sack. Now, that was a Caleb Williams holding the ball too long. Max told me at some point today, and I don't think we've said it on the air, you said that PFF had Caleb Williams as the lowest graded offensive player for the Bears.
Yes, he graded out to a 46.1.
Yeah, and look, there were just so many opportunities out there for him, I thought. And his team let him down. The Zacchaeus play we've talked about ad nauseum at this point. I mean, that's a massive play. He made some plays, too. You know, that big third and five to Loveland, it's wide open. It's a pitch and catch that literally any father and son or father and daughter or mother and daughter could make in the backyard. It was that easy. The defense was that, you know, non-resistant. But, God, he's inaccurate. Inaccurate. And Aikman must have pointed it out, you know, five times during the game. Man, he's got this here. He just doesn't come back to it, doesn't see it. And people were wide open all over the field. With that said, he was 17 of 29 for 252. That kind of tells you something right there. In a game that wasn't, you know, garbage yards, obviously, at the end. Sometimes you got 250 plus because you're down three touchdowns and the other team's sitting back in prevent. That's not what we had on Monday night, clearly. But the fact that he was the lowest graded player, for whatever it's worth, I know some of you feel the same way I do about PFF, which is it's a tool. It's interesting information. It's certainly not the end-all be-all. But for him to be the lowest graded offensive player and throw for 252 a touchdown without one interception. He did have a turnover worthy throw. Sanders still should have had that one. Tells you just how bad Washington was defensively. Tell me real quickly if you have that PFF thing opened up the grades. What about their offensive lineman, Darnell Wright in particular? Did you look that up for me or not? Because I thought their offensive line was really good.
He graded top five. Let me pull it. Best offensive grades, Darnell Wright, 75.7.
Okay, so that's well above average in the PFF, 60s average.
Mm-hmm.
What about the Chiefs guard that they signed?
Tooney. Top offensive grade on the team. He graded an 88.
Yeah, their offensive line was good.
Real good. They did a lot.
Really good the other night.
Did a lot in this offseason. It's worked out.
All right. What else did he say? They were working out Treylon Burks. Remember him, the first round Tennessee receiver from Arkansas? Man, Burks was one of those interesting guys. He was big. You know, remember Treylon coming out of Arkansas? That's the Jahan Dotson draft? Is Burks the...
I believe so. 2019, right?
Well, then 22 is that... Let's see.
Drafted.
Yeah, 22. The 22 draft is the Jahan Dotson draft, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and Burks was in that draft. So you had a lot of wide receivers, right, in that draft. Here it is. I've got the list in front of me now. You had Drake London go one, Garrett Wilson go two, Olave after the trade with New Orleans with Washington went three in terms of wide receivers. London was 8 overall, Wilson was 10 overall, Olave was 11 overall, Jameson Williams was 12 overall to Detroit, Jahan Dotson 16 overall to Washington, and then Treylon Burks 18 overall to Tennessee. Those were the first rounders in that particular draft. I think in watching Burks, you know, who is was a bigger receiver, you know, he and London were probably the two biggest receivers in that draft height-wise, I'm guessing. You know, Washington was in love with Drake London in that draft, just so you know. They were in love with London in that draft, and they were very much in love with the offensive lineman that went to the Seahawks. Charles Cross. Those were the two players. Had they fallen to 11, they would have never made the trade. I don't know why they didn't love Kyle Hamilton, but whatever. Burks, to me, first of all, no quarterback, right, for the most part. You know, Will Levis for part of the time. He just never looked super interested, and he missed a lot of games because of injuries. He just looked like one of those guys that always was going through the motions. But former first-round pick, they were working him out today. What else came out of that? Drake Jackson, they actually signed, you know, the defensive end that's coming off the terrible patellar tendon injury. He's a 49er, so obviously familiarity with Adam Peters. Yeah. And then Cosme there at the end. Cosme's close. Terry's close. Hopefully in time for Dallas. By the way, CeeDee Lamb is close. He could be back for Sunday's game. All right. Those of you on hold, I appreciate you holding. We'll get to your calls. The question that we're getting to is, just describe this team through six games. It's more of a small sample size now. We got more to kind of judge. We're getting to that point where we kind of are starting to figure out what they have. It'll never be completely figured out. It's the nature of the NFL. But how do you describe our team after six games to someone who hasn't seen any of the six games? 301-230-0980. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to your calls next.
All right, quick little, here's what's happening on Wednesday, October 15th. The Washington Commanders are bringing in former Titans wide receiver Treylon Burks for a workout. Burks was released by the Titans after suffering a collarbone injury this preseason. Now he is fully healed and visiting potential suitors to postseason baseball. The Dodgers, they beat the Brewers 5-1. Yoshinobu Yamamoto throws all nine innings, giving up only one solo shot from Jackson Chourio in the first inning, and the Dodgers' bats rolled from there. Again, they win 5-1. The Caps, they get the overtime win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. Logan Thompson saved 17 of 19 shots he faced. Jacob Chychrun with the overtime winner at the end to put the Caps over the Lightning 3-2. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I would describe the team through six games this way. Washington is a playoff contending team in the NFC with a roster that is barely average, and that's being kind, but a way above average quarterback. 301-230-0980. How would you describe it? Lap's been on hold for a while. Lap, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? Hey,
what's up, Lap?
Show, bro.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just think the defense is bad. We really don't have an identity on this team. I think it can be the run game if we do it more. It looks like we're going to have to play superhero ball again with JD5 having to carry us. And that was my point I made to you yesterday about I think this is a playoff team, especially with JD5 and Terry. We're definitely dangerous if we get to the postseason. But in the meantime, with the schedule being tough, it's going to be hard. And my last point is, if you look at the Bills and certain teams now, you know, they're used to playing a tough schedule because they always, you know,
right,
making the playoffs.
Right.
We haven't made the playoffs like that with this regime. So I think year three or four, Jaden is going to really take it to a whole nother level, man. And he's going to get used to playing some of these defenses, like you were breaking down the Bliss percentage, you know what I'm saying, for us.
Yeah.
And I think he's gonna be good, man. So we'll see, man. I want to get Dallas. Let's get this win. go from there, and it's going to be tough because the schedule is tough, and everybody in the conference is tough, even at the league. You can't sleep on nobody.
Thanks, Lap. Appreciate it. Let's go to Athan in Annapolis. Athan, go ahead. How do you describe this team after six games?
They're just very average with a good quarterback. And, you know, last year, Kevin, it was about, well, we had Emmanuel Forbes, Benjamin St. Juice, and Michael Davis in the secondary. Well, what's the excuse now that we've upgraded with Lattimore and you had Sanders still with the year under his belt and Amos? It's just that they're underachieving. The Falcons and Bears are not potent offenses like the Bills, the Eagles, and the Chiefs, and that's the frustrating part for me.
The Falcons may be.
They're still... Well, I don't think they're elite, though. You know, or just up. It should have been up and down the field the way it was against us.
Right. But no, I would certainly agree with you in the moment. And they had scored 0 points the week before. So, yeah, your point's well taken. I just think that ultimately Atlanta's got some legitimate star, you know, skill position players.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, I think, in years to come. I still don't like Raheem much as a coach, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
They're underachieving for the town. I know the pass rush is either hit or miss, but you're underachieving with significantly, at least name-wise, upgraded talent in the secondary. And from what I hear from Chris Russell and Linnell, it doesn't sound like they practice very hard. I hear these practices are kind of like powder puff sessions, and that really makes me question at least Witt and Quinn, because if you have the same communication problems every week, I mean, Colston Loveland is not Tony Gonzalez. Alameda Zacchaeus is not Jerry Rice. And you know, these wide open receivers again on Monday,
they
had 500 yards against us.
Yeah.
You know, why? Why is the question? You got better talent in the secondary.
You know, that question keeps coming back to me. It's a lot of things. But to me, like, at some point, if you lose 38-35 to the Cowboys, if you beat the Cowboys 38-35, you know, if you start getting lit up on the regular because, you know, you didn't get lit up by the teams that weren't very good or the teams that were banged up when you played them, but if that happens, I can't imagine there won't be some change. Might be personnel-wise, or it might be more significant. It could be play calling or something to that effect. I agree with you. I don't know what the answer to the why is, though, Athan. I don't, but it seems to me that the players that they have, I'm not, you know, they don't have a great defensive player. You know, they don't have a great front seven game wrecker. They don't have a great cover guy, but they've got some good talent, and yet we're starting to see against the teams that are just okay a lot of what we saw last year, even though it manifests itself a little bit differently, although on Monday night it felt like last year, seeing the edge runs by DeAndre Swift. Let's go to Bobby in North Carolina. Bobby, go ahead. How do you describe our team after six games?
Hey, buddy. Let me just go back to Monday night because I didn't get the call yesterday. Kevin, I'm still pissed that we let that opportunity get away. I know we had three turnovers. Should have won that game. Very winnable game. That being said, we're just average right now, Kevin, as a team after 6 weeks. And the main reason why we're average because our defense sucks. We've been talking about the same thing for almost a year and a half now. Okay, it's the same thing week after week after week. I'm sick of it. We've got major gaps in our defensive scheme, man. I know you've seen some film already. One of them plays Monday night, a receiver is running a shallow cross and Lattimore had him, and then he passed him on to our middle linebacker. Bobby didn't know he was crossing, you know, and he was playing middle linebacker. So he just gave up on the route and passed him on. It was a chunk play. Kevin, we're just doing the same things over and over again, and I'm sick of it. And we're never going – you said something yesterday, because I listen, you know, like I always do, and you made a comment yesterday. It'd be nice if the freaking defense could stand up and make a play to help the offense out, okay? They got to just step up every now and then, Kevin. It's the same thing. It's going to be the same thing Sunday, Kevin. We're playing an elite offensive team. That's going to be probably a shootout. We don't have – do we have the personnel scheme? Something's wrong, and it needs to be fixed because it's the same thing week after week after week, buddy.
The only thing that I will say, Bobby, I don't think that this team lacks the effort or the urgency. I think they look confused too often. That's the thing for me, and you want them to play fast all the time. You know, there have been a couple of games where it's like, all right, that's great, but they were against Russell Wilson's Giants and Geno Smith's Raiders, and the Chargers just were a mess along the offensive line. So, yeah, no, I hear you. Let's go to Paulie. Paulie, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, how you doing, man?
What's up?
Ain't nothing much, man. Hey, I'm gonna say this: if I was describing this team to somebody, I would say the offense is fine. All right? The offense is fine. As much as I don't necessarily agree with Kingsbury and his strat, you know, his style is fine because you have Jaden. All right? And we could win with the offense. Defensive-wise, they bipolar. And the coaching staff is in denial of what they have on the field. And not only that, they're getting out-coached. They're getting out-coached week in and week out. And it's basically because, I said they're in denial and they're stubborn because they're not making any changes, no adjustments. Like Bobby just said, it's the same problem from last year. And you haven't made it. Don't tell me about the old guys you brought in. That's another problem. The playing team needs old guys. I'd rather lose with young guys with some athleticism and some speed than with these old guys. They're not going to get it. They're not getting any better. They are who they are. So
yeah,
What did we try to take away from the Bears on Monday night?
I don't know. I mean,
exactly.
You know, in going back and looking at some of those things at the end, it's like, why didn't we just load up the box, crowd the line of scrimmage, set the edge with two guys, and make sure that they didn't bust a run? That was the most frustrated I've been watching the team this year, was that last final drive. And by the way, we're going to hear the coordinators tomorrow. I got to run, Paulie. We're going to hear the coordinators tomorrow. And I'm going to be very interested in Joe Witt, because 2 weeks ago after the Atlanta game, we got six-minute answers about how people can't wear capes and people got to start doing their jobs. And I said, you know, he might be right. And you can get away with that once when you get torched. If he comes back tomorrow and puts it all on the players again, even if he's right, it's not the way to go. Because that was a pathetic defensive performance Monday night, especially with the game on the line after your quarterback made a mistake, like the first in 20 games. After bailing you out, and you let DeAndre Swift run untouched for 34 yards into chip shot field goal range. Back tomorrow. Chris Russell next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.